This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you're okay with that, listen on. If not, pause the podcast, go watch the movie we're about to talk about, and come on back.
All right, sweet.
Excuse me.
Brian, over here. Hey.
Pardon me.
Why don't you have the popcorn? It's starting!
Woo!
Hey!
Shut up and listen to the podcast. Hey!
There's a lot out there to see. This is what we watched.
Now, has what we watched done like movie clubs for cult classics?
Not yet. Not yet. We've had I wouldn't say arguments. We've had debates about what a cult classic is and what makes it a cult. Because okay. I would say before I watched it, I thought that Tremors was a cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
Now, like, looking back on it, like, when it started, it's a legitimate movie. Now, the sequels are definitely cult classics. But Tremors itself, I think, has the cult classic aesthetic and feel to it. But it was definitely, like, a legitimate attempt at making, like, a real sci-fi movie.
Okay.
Whereas, I think something like, you know, The Room and Rocky Horror are true cult classics.
True.
I'd love to do an actual.
I would also say Big Lebowski is up there.
Really? You think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Cult classic?
So here's how I define a cult classic. It has to have done poorly at the box office.
Sure.
And through word of mouth, it becomes this whole monster. I mean, hell, there is a legitimate religion called Dudism.
Oh, that's right. Mm. There is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So that's what I said, too, is something that takes on a second life, something that gets more attention after its home video release or after its theatrical run has ended than it does like, during. So Mad Max, honestly, would be a cult classic.
Yes.
Because it gets more attention or it got more attention after the fact, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think.
Or we're just putting, you know, labels on stuff. We're just kind of putting things into boxes.
Edgar
that don't
Wright's
really
trilogy
need it.
Would be a good sign of a cult classic,
okay.
I think.
Okay. Because
it's one of those things where it's like, you make a reference to it, and it's like only the people that know that movie will understand it.
Sure.
You know, that's what I see as a cult classic.
All right, sweet.
What about you, Luke?
Wikipedia defines cult film.
No, go ahead. Please tell us.
Oh, okay. All right. Wikipedia defines a cult film that a cult film or cult movie, also commonly referred to as a cult classic, is a film that has acquired a cult following. They are known for their dedicated, passionate fan base, which forms an elaborate subculture, members of which engage in repeated viewings, dialogue quoting, and audience participation.
At what point did you fall asleep, Matt?
After the third or fourth cult? Mention of the word cult. And I want to join one.
Do you think that Harry Potter in the future will be a cult classic?
No.
No.
No?
No,
because it was popular during release.
That was a worldwide phenomenon even before the movies came out.
Yep.
Yes, however, it does meet those.
No,
it has a passionate fan base.
Okay.
Elaborate subculture.
Okay.
And members of the audience engage in repeated viewings, dialogue quoting, and participation.
I think it's less about dialogue quoting and audience participation, as in I'm just enthralled by this world that they've created and I want to be a part of it.
I would say Anchorman is closer to a cult classic than Harry Potter.
I would agree with that. Closer, not quite a cult, but closer, for sure.
A lot closer, because you are, like, again, when you quote that movie or have repeated viewings, it's people that know it inside and out, and it's not necessarily like it takes on, like, it's your whole personality, whereas a lot of Harry Potter fans, that's their personality.
Yeah, that's who and what they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tried and true.
I'm a Hufflepuff.
We know. We know. It's okay. We forgive you.
He's a Hufflepuff, too.
I know, and I forgive him. All right, well, you know what isn't a cult classic yet? Fallout. That's right. Welcome back to What We Watch, the movie review podcast for TV lovers, for film lovers, for movie lovers, and for those who apparently like decapitation, I guess.
I mean, Sometimes.
Yeah. only on the rare occasion that someone begs me to take their head.
When the mood strikes, yeah.
Someone begs you to take their head?
Don't ask too many questions. Don't look into that. I have your host, Brandon.
Oh!
I've got Matt Plimpton in here. I've got Luke Antonio with me. What's going on, guys? And guys, thank you so much for joining me. We're going to do a video list. We'll still be on YouTube, so thanks everyone for checking us out on the platform. We're going to do video less just because it got a little crazy with the cameras last time. But well, we're going to figure that out, hopefully very soon. For those who also don't know, we're all over socials. We're all over, with, any platform that you get your podcast on. So go check us out on Spotify, Apple, Google, anywhere that you listen. We are there. So yes, we were mentioning cult classics. Fallout is the TV series that we're currently rewatching and we're talking about. We've already done a couple weeks. Today, guys, we're talking episode 3, which is called The Head.
The Head.
The Head. So, you had, did you have more on cult classics? You look like, Luke, you were had more to discuss. You had more to, like, get into.
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right, cool. But yeah, so if anybody knows, I don't even know if that intro is going to be on, but if anybody knows where any of these midnight showings are going to be, please let us know in the comments.
Yes.
All right, sweet. So we're moving on with Fallout episode 3, which is conveniently subtitled The Beginning. That's where we start, which is, again, very interesting to me that the whole series starts at the end and then we go back to
the first episode's called The End.
The Beginning. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
But I mean like the first like title card when episode 3 starts, it's The Beginning.
Oh.
Right? And it's one of the few that it doesn't do it for much of this series. So I think where its place is interesting and then where like the beginning of everything starts in their opinion, it to me it's just very interesting. But yeah, so what did you guys think of episode 3 overall before we jump into the kind of the whole plot of everything?
This is probably one of my favorite episodes in this season.
Okay.
Interesting. It wasn't my favorite episode. Maybe, I don't know. There was definitely a lot of story going on. But at the same time, I felt like some of it was kind of a distraction.
Okay.
But I understand the necessity for the episode. Because of The Head.
Mm-hmm.
The Head is like the MacGuffin through for basically the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, and this is does a lot of the backstory heavy lifting, kind of, you know, gets us caught up on where these characters, you know, were, at least where one of these characters was, and, you know, kind of moving forward with a lot of those, you know, themes of how different life was versus how twisted you are now, and all of that. So, yeah, I liked it too. I know why you liked it though, because Luke, it's all about the film industry in the beginning. So you're
exactly.
Is that it?
I love getting the ghoul's backstory, as an actor, and then seeing what he's become.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I did get kind of like a skin crawly moment when he was making sure that, you know, the Vol-Tec suit that he's sporting, you know, is this really going to protect against radiation? And it looks straight to the Vol-Tec people and they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh. It's like, oh, these people are so sick.
Yeah, huh? They'll say anything, anything to get people on their side. Oh, my God. And that's one of those things, like, that's just in there. Like, it's not a big deal. There's not, like, a light shot shined on it.
Stuff.
Right. It definitely... Oh, it 100% does. That's what I mean. Like, it's got so much weight, but we don't take time to sit there and like, dissect the moment as it's happening or, like, you know, really pause. It's really quick on, you know, on the way out.
It is kind of blink and you miss it.
Yes.
But
it's so vital.
It is.
Yeah.
Because that's Vol-Tec as a whole. It's this really happy-go-lucky company on the outside for everyone to see, but the deeper you go into their own vault, the more sick and twisted they are.
Yep.
And I know we're gonna see that later on in the series.
Oh, we absolutely are.
Yeah.
All right. So starting from the beginning, So we get some of Cooper's backstory. It turns out that he was an actor in Hollywood in this twisted future. And it's, you know, it's interesting because there's still like the Red Scare, right? They still hate communism. They still hate like the Russians, and you know that whole like 50s mentality has never really left them.
Yeah.
Entirely, even though it's a completely futuristic society, mm-hmm. you know, it's just it's an interesting world that Fallout has created and that we live in this. And I love it, but it's at the same time, it's so foreign. It just feels, I don't know, strange to me.
It's like if the 50s and a twisted version of Gene Roddenberry had a baby.
Okay.
Because Gene Roddenberry, you know, creator of Star Trek.
Right.
Had this really idealistic look at the future. And you look at Fallout, and it's very, it's got that 50s diesel punk feel to it.
Right.
But it's got this dark underbelly that it's like a perversion of that future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. It's twisted is the best way I think that I can describe it. But yeah, so we get Cooper's, you know, he's doing a scene and he's like, you know, I'm not really into it. I don't know like why. So he's a sheriff in this old Western. He's a Western actor. And you know, it's kind of the run of the mill, you know, cowboy stuff. Right. And so what's really cool is he's in this traditional blue and yellow, like, I guess not traditional, but he's in this blue and yellow, getup and this costume, which looks exactly like the Vault Tech, you know, suit that they're going to put on later. And I love that. It's, again, it feels a little bit, maybe, is it too on the nose? Is it, you know, should it be more subtle? But it's, I like
it. It's still taking the right amount of serious.
Yes.
It's still taking all the source material serious, but it's like a wink at the audience.
Right.
You know?
Right. And what I really love about this scene is the whole thing, right? So Cooper's sheriff character, he never really kills people, right? He just, you know, captures them, and he does the right thing, right? He has this whole justice mentality, and so he himself takes that head on. Is like, you know, should we ever deviate from that? And what the new direction is no, we want to start killing people. We want to start making it a little bit more gory, a little bit more violent, a little bit more edgy for, you know, what we've been doing. And I love that because Cooper doesn't want to do, he doesn't want to be violent. He's not interested in being vengeful, which again, then you juxtapose that with 200 years later, now where he is, and he gets off on being vengeful.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting character turn. And that's why I love that we have episodes like this where we do get to sit back, we do get to dissect who these people were. And, you know, hopefully we get into what actually causes them to change into who they are.
Right.
And then, you know, also going with his intro scene in the first episode in the pilot and how, you know, it captures our intrigue of how he got to that point from being this famous actor.
Right.
To then doing children's birthday parties.
Right.
And then all further, the way to him now as a ghoul.
Yeah, and it's continuing to tie back into what the doctor was saying in episode 2, I think. Like, when you get what you want, are you going to be the same animal that you were? And I know we'll get into it in the next episode, and I'm really excited to talk about the next episode because that was actually my favorite one so far.
All right.
But I do like the little peeks behind the curtain with Coop's personal life, with his acting career, all of that. Like, he's just an intriguing character altogether.
He is. I love a good origin story, and I think they really did a great job in developing him.
I think so, too.
And his
origins. I think so, too. Did you guys know what was in the box before he opened the box? After he met with his wife, they had that whole little, you know, the cutesy, hey, have we met before kind of thing, the little flirtatious meeting. And then she hands him, okay, it's time to go to your next gig or whatever, time to go change. And he opens the box. Hey, they even made it in your color. Did you guys know what it was before we cut back to the last bit of the episode and he's wearing the jumpsuit?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I totally was like, is that really going to be what it is? There's no way. There's no way he's going to be. And then he walks out. I mean, we're jumping way ahead, but he walks out onto the stage and he's in that Vault-Tec suit. And I'm like, oh, this just got fucking wild.
Yeah.
I did not
make that connection. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right over my head.
I had assumed that it was, but I was like, you know, there's a chance it's something else, but it's got to be, right? There's no way it would be this obvious, and it was. I loved it.
It was great.
All right, so then we go back to the wasteland. We cut all the way to the future. Lucy.
Into the future.
Lucy has done the deed, as we say. And the dog doesn't really seem to care too much about leaving his owner. Like, she's like, all right, cool. You're now my master.
Well,
I'm going to follow you.
Because it's what's in his head that's more important.
I guess, but to the dog?
I mean...
Wow, that's dark.
No, I mean, think about it. What he injects himself with,
uh-huh,
I think was a neural link to the dog.
Okay. Okay. Now, for everyone who doesn't know, Matt hasn't finished the series yet. So, Luke, we can't spoil anything yet, but I love the theory.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm gonna write this down.
I love to theorize as I'm going through the show, and then once I'm right, then it's like, all right,
mm-hmm,
a win.
Yes, yes.
Chalk that up. Oh, two for the year? Yes.
Two for the year? Oh, dear. All right, sweet.
Self-deprecation.
So, but yeah, also, so the dog isn't, you know, has no qualms about leaving the owner's body behind.
Yeah.
And Lucy seems to have no issues with carrying a fucking human head around.
Not
is
anymore.
That, I mean, like, that doesn't bother you guys that she's just so okay with carrying a fucking head, decapitated head around?
I mean, we talked about it earlier. It's this radical acceptance. Like, she understands that she needs to get this to Moldaver in order to get her dad back.
Sure.
So it's less about worrying about her own comfort and just doing the job.
Yeah, she'll go to any length to,
yeah,
you know, accomplish her mission.
And yeah, we'll see that later on in the show as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do see that later on, that she is very, you know, willing to go the extra mile. She's very willing to, you know, do things that she's uncomfortable with. But this just seems like, whoa.
We're good.
This just seems like it's not out of left field necessarily, but it's a step really far, really far.
She's starting to become more accustomed to the wasteland.
Yeah.
She's
understanding the ins and outs. I mean,
well, she's starting to.
When she starts to interact with the ghoul more, that's when it's like, okay, I really have to strap in because this world will chew me up and spit me out if I'm not prepared.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you feel like that tracker would stay in the nose cavity? Like, even though she wedged it up there?
I thought he injected it in his neck.
No, that Lucy shoves up there.
Oh.
Into his nose. Like, I feel like that wouldn't stay.
No, probably
especially
not.
Especially decrepit, like, rapidly decaying head.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like that would definitely fall out.
Yeah.
Well, but he doesn't seem to be human. So maybe
you
his,
think the doctor's the not in- human?
I mean, it seems like he might be partially human, part something else.
Interesting. I did not get that vibe at all.
He's got like electric currents going through him.
Well, we all do.
Sort of, but not like that. I don't know. I got something that wasn't quite 100% human from him. So maybe the way
it's also the actor.
Yeah,
he's always given off a vibe that's just like not all there, not
well,
all human.
Didn't he like electrocute her at one point?
I don't think so.
No,
I
don't think so.
No,
might be thinking of a different show.
Maybe.
All right, so then we move on, and Lucy is, you know, still she's fantasizing, and then we didn't talk too much about with the last episode when the knight shows up with Maximus shows up. She's so in love with him, right? I am curious to know how she knows that he's a knight, because the vault people, at least 33, they don't know about the Brotherhood of Steel, right? Because they went underground 200 years ago.
Right.
And have been growing up underground, and the Brotherhood was born in some time in between the first bombs dropping and
But they also come from an alternate history. So, and
those suits
definitely existed before the Brotherhood of Steel. The Brotherhood of Steel just kind of co-opted those suits for their own games.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. That's all I need to hear.
I solve problems. I answer questions. I may be wrong, but...
So, speaking of Max, so now we have Max, you know, panicking far too quickly and, you know, trying to figure out how he's going to get this suit, you know, back to working order.
Yeah.
So he goes and he gets this piece fixed, which is one of the funniest moments of all time. I love it. I love it so much. Where he has to bargain to get an extra cap, which, again, is a fascinating idea that a dentist would buy teeth. He would buy people's teeth and not, right, you know, I don't know, pay money. You pay him to take them out, I guess. I don't know. So Maximus gets his extra cap, and all she does is just zaps the little piece and it seems to work. We get the iconic bottle cap sound. We don't get it very much throughout, but we get that iconic sound, and I love it. I want to know if it's ripped directly from the game or if they actually went in and recreated it.
He was walking around with those bottle caps in his shoe.
Sure, why not? Where else would you keep them?
That's so painful.
It's gotta be. I mean, maybe if you keep the opening down.
Yeah.
Right? So you're walking on the top of the cap.
It's slightly less uncomfortable.
Other way around, you're looking at like some sort of acupuncture kind of thing.
Right, something like what happened to his friend.
Oh, yeah.
More or less. I know.
Less razor sharp, though.
Yeah, more...
dull and rusty.
No, thanks. So, okay.
You're all
so
caught
then...
up on your tetanus shots, right?
Yeah, right? What's tetanus and what's a shot? So he gets back to his power suit, and I think it definitely checks out that Marauders, Raiders would jump on that thing immediately. As quickly as it happens, that makes sense. That absolutely does. But my God, he really got the shit fucking kicked out of him.
Yeah.
Holy he came Christ. Back. He came back with his own power trip, basically.
True.
I mean,
true.
When he just inserts an arm into the suit and then just crushes the guy's head full
which
blown.
Is fucking badass.
I will say that part, I was like, oh my God. All right. This is the show we're into.
That was
okay.
A sick death, but. My question is, how did the suit work without that piece that he just had fixed?
I think
and
it worked.
He hadn't got it in there
yet. Well, he still has the fusion core.
Yes. I think it worked enough for him to be able to like move his arms and layer his arm. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know what piece he took out. Let's say that. That could have been a navigation. That could have been not communication because he already fucking ripped that out when he panicked.
And did you guys buy the fact that he was able to hold himself against like five huge
dudes? Absolutely not. Not just that, but like, there's no way. How the fuck is he still alive?
Yeah.
How is he able to get up?
Yeah.
And you know, walk around and talk and be conscious like that. Yeah. So those kind of things to me just seem really far fetched.
Disbelief, but also
that pushes it for me.
Yes, he got the shit kicked out of him all the time with the Brotherhood, but these aren't the Brotherhood.
True. Right?
They're not trained soldiers.
Right.
And
no, but they have like crowbars and shit.
Yeah.
Like,
true. But
I would say they're even more, they'd be more brutal than the guys at the Brotherhood because those guys didn't want to kill him. They just wanted him to
rough him up a little
bit.
Yeah,
rough him up.
Tough
These him. Guys, I feel like, would have just finished him off.
Yes.
Or at least left him unconscious. And then, like, if I had been writing it, he would have woken up, the suit's gone, now he's got to track down the suit as an next obstacle.
That's definitely one way to get him out of the suit. Because, again, I think it is such a power trip for him to suit.
No, exactly. It really is. So you take that away, and I think it becomes a little bit more interesting of a character, right? Another want, another obstacle, another goal for this guy. But I like where we came from, because I love Johnny Pemberton. And so Thaddeus is one of my favorite characters, might be my favorite character in the whole show. I'm not going to lie. Like
Where else have I seen that
so
guy?
So have you seen the FX show You're the Worst?
No.
Okay. That's where I know him from, and he is absolutely insane in that show. He doesn't have a long run in that show, but he is by far one of the best characters of that.
He was in Ant-Man.
Yeah, Johnny Pemberton was in Ant-Man. He was in 2021 and 22. Jump Street is Delroy.
Delroy.
Let's see, what else might you guys know? He was He was in Superstore. If you guys have seen that show.
I have not. Oh my God, he was in Weird, the Al Yankovic story.
Yes, he was in Weird.
Just going through his IMDb here.
Yep.
Oh, he was on Law and Order at one point. I mean, who wasn't, honestly?
Anyone who's tried to act has been on one of those shows.
At least.
But yeah, I think he's a fantastic character actor. I think he's great. And I think he gets better. I think his character gets more fleshed out. But this is, yeah, so he jumps down. So Thaddeus comes down. Of course it's Thaddeus who comes to help Maximus, right? You know, nobody, unbeknownst to everybody, you know, that Maximus actually did live. But
I did, that was a nice scene with Thaddeus and Maximus in the suit.
Which one are you talking about? Because right away, like, Thaddeus, he's so scared shitless, right?
Yeah.
Because he's actually really intuitive. Like, he immediately clocks, like, the situation. He knows what's happening. He sees the bloody gauntlet. He sees the crushed head. And then, right, you know, this arm just holding over him. Like, he's absolutely like, I'm going to fucking die and I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out, hey, what did I do? All I want to do is serve you. You know, thank you so much for taking me on. You know, I don't know what I can do. And then, of course, you know, Max is going to go on the same power trip that the old Titus did. And it's just this never-ending cycle of abuse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, later on.
That part frustrated me, honestly.
Oh,
I think if he came clean earlier, it would be a lot different. But instead, we got this Star Wars A New Hope scene where he gets the call from the Brotherhood. And it's literally Han Solo being like, oh, everything's fine. We're all fine here now. How are you? it's literally like that. We're sending a squad down. Oh, negative, negative. I can't do that. It's literally the same.
Yes.
Beats.
I never made that connection. Fucking, you're so right.
Yeah.
And it does. Like I said,
it kind of frustrates me, though.
So fast. He panics so quickly. He doesn't think this through.
Yeah.
Because you don't think things through, right? You just kind of are acting and going, oh, I'm on top of the world.
Maybe that's what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he also just killed someone. He also just, like.
Well, I'm talking before he killed someone.
He let
his
knight die.
Yeah.
He did let his knight die.
So, yeah, I can understand his panic.
I can too, but I think, I don't know, there's got to be a more efficient way of getting him out of the suit, humbling him, and getting rid of the power trip.
Because
throughout the series, that's been my biggest issue with Maximus, is he, I think you said it last time, he comes off kind of like Finn, and I love Finn's character in Star Wars, so why don't I like Maximus in Fallout? Because it's so similar.
Maybe because it's, I don't know, too accurate to what people would actually do. Possibly. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
I'm going to have to think about it.
Think on that for sure. Come back to us.
And just keep watching.
Keep watching. I do love when Thaddeus comes, you know, he's like, oh, we also have new orders, right? We also have to kill anybody who comes in contact or who stands in our way, which means now the plot thickens with Maximus has new orders to kill Lucy, who he also has a crush on.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, all right, cool. So we're setting the stage of what are we going to do when push comes to shove, you know, when everyone kind of comes to a head and when the whole plot, you know, comes together. What are we actually going to do? What choices are these characters going to make? And that to me is interesting writing. And that's what really, you know, helps this show stand apart is because those little things actually do, you know, you do get to see the acts come to fruition.
And speaking of thickening plot, we also get back to the Vault Dwellers.
Yes.
What's her brother's name?
Norm.
Mm-hmm.
Rico.
I just remember him from Ender's Game.
Montana.
Oh, Jesus.
He was
Christ.
Rico.
Oh, I just remember him as the kid that Ender kills in Ender's Game.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys ever read the book or saw that, but it was
I saw the movie once when it first came out. But
great ideas. Great ideas. Horrible execution.
Oh, that's so sad.
No, he played a character on Hannah Montana called Rico. He was like infatuated with Hannah Montana. And so I had a younger sister, but also my wife was a huge Hannah Montana fan. So every time when we were first making our way through the series, she was like, Rico!
Oh my God.
But the plot thickens on that storyline as well.
Yeah.
Because the leadership is dead
right
at this point.
Right. I mean, there is no leadership.
There is no leadership. And we get Blind Al from Deadpool. I it took me forever to make that connection, but then I put sunglasses over her. I'm like, oh, it's Blind Al.
Oh, the yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the one of the overseers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. The three people
or
that
council members,
yeah,
and
council
then the
members.
Other one of the other overseers or council members is from Severance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
love him.
Yeah, he's great.
So the same guy from Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah, I think so.
Is he?
And big guy, curly beard.
And he had a part in Shang-Chi, I think.
That's
too.
Right. That's right. Just, yeah. I'm noticing the bit parts, but in any case, yes, I love
Zach
how
Cherry.
They're.
Yep.
I love how they're just kind of fumbling with who's going to be a leader, who's not, because they're so sheltered, literally and figuratively, from the ins and outs of political play.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And well, they're all so polite, but they're not getting anything done.
Because they're so polite. Like, they don't have what it takes to actually be conniving enough to make the tough decisions.
Or to just act in general.
Right. And I love the, you know, that Norm is also, like, he's not scared of telling the truth. Like, he's really not afraid
right.
of riling people up and, you know, speaking his mind, which we'll get into in the next episode of, like, what the consequences are.
We can talk about a little bit of that in this episode, because they're trying to figure out what to do with the remaining raiders that they have imprisoned,
right.
basically.
Right.
And they're like, oh, do unto others as you'd have to do unto them, like the golden rule. And Norm is just like, are you kidding me right now? These guys killed so many of our people. She lost an eye mm-hmm. and her husband. Mm-hmm. Like, are you really going to let them run free? It's the whole, it's they're rehashing the death penalty arguments that we've seen before, but he's the only one that really stands up. But you can tell people start to get where he's coming
right.
from slowly
right.
but surely.
Well, they start, they
it's planting the seeds basically. I think for Norm to have this arc of finding himself as a leader.
Yes.
Or an overseer.
Yes.
It's just so funny when they're just before Norm speaks up, they're just discussing what they should do with the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Teach them calculus. Teach
oh,
them Shakespeare.
Oh,
they're so out of touch with
reality.
Yeah.
Oh
right?
yeah. And that part I will say was great in this episode. It was frustrating, but great. Cause I mean, in all honesty, if I were in their situation, I'd be like, I see where you're coming from. I don't know if I fully agree. Teaching them calculus doesn't necessarily civilize them.
Well, because it's not only you mentioned like,
they keep bringing up
you know the commentary
rule.
On the death penalty, but it's also a commentary on the prison system that
yeah
of like. Do we rehabilitate prisoners or do we use corporal punishment of prisoners?
Or are prisoners, you know, are these people who have done bad things even capable of being rehabilitated,
yeah.
right? Like, there is commentary on all of this.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love it.
Deep stuff. Very deep, though.
Very deep. Very deep. Also, but before all that, I mean, I love the like, almost the interrogation scene with Norm and the my God, I can't think.
Council.
I almost said panelists.
Yes.
You guys got me in the whole Comic-Con mentality. with the councils, with the council people, you know, like, it's totally me. You know, every job you've worked, it comes back with lax enthusiasm. It's totally me. But I love, there's at Matt, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a little bit of foreshadowing. Luke, you know this. When, she's saying, hey, I've telegrammed the overseer of Vault 31. Thank God they're unscathed. Ooh, that takes on a whole new meaning on the second watch.
Yeah, it
oh
is.
Oh, my God, I loved it. I love that.
There is definitely something weird about Vault 31.
Oh, yes, there is. And then, of course, Norm being a smartass backfires. Honestly, though, how stupid are they to put Norm, the one who hates the Raiders probably more than anybody, on feeding them duty? Like, you don't think that that might lead to him... poisoning or doing anything?
Well,
like,
maybe that's what they want. I mean, it was a similar thing with the Brotherhood. They're
if you want it, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Don't you take it. Mm-hmm. I think it's all a test.
Interesting.
I think there's layers upon layers of people being tested by someone that they don't know about.
I love that. I was wondering if it's that or if it's maybe, you know, they just don't think Norm has it in him.
Yeah.
Right? Which, again, also is maybe a test or a testament to his character. And again, like with Maximus.
During the raid.
Exactly. But he also, like Lucy, kind of was like, here, you stay here.
Yeah.
And he just kind of let it happen. Back with Maximus is, hey, I'm going to do anything to prove myself. This is also the start of Norm's. I'm going to do anything to prove myself. But not to anybody else, but to himself, I think.
Yeah.
Because he is. He's ashamed. Hey, I hid. You know, we'll talk about it in the next episode. But anyway, so yeah. So I just wanted to get on there. And of course, the NPCs, you know, those raiders, the NPC raiders are just so predictably unstable, throwing food at the windows and yelling and attacking at any chance they get, even if they're behind a cage. Like, you play a game and they'll still, they're hitting the bars and everything. Like, yeah, you dumb NPCs.
I love the way they directed... the video game like moments of the show, whether it's like new item acquired, or here's the NPCs, it's so good.
Oh, absolutely.
The way they handled it all.
Oh, absolutely. So then we jump back to the wasteland, and Lucy has come across the flooded city, which I also feel is very accurate, that a lot of apocalypse shows and movies don't actually accurately depict is places are going to flood. Is going to be
the
rampant.
The dams break.
Dams are going to break. I mean, flood, you know, the rain's going to accumulate from somewhere. You know,
so
streets are going to break down.
This scene is another one reason why this is one of my favorite episodes from this season.
Yeah?
This abomination that we get to see in this scene. It's so cool. Yeah. I don't remember an abomination like this in the game.
I don't know anything exactly like this either.
Yeah.
But this giant axolotl.
Love
with
it.
With fingers for, like, teeth?
Yeah.
It's... No. Yeah.
Right? Makes my skin crawl.
It. Yeah. Just, like, it crawls. It's like...
Yeah. You had to go there.
But the way that... Oh, yeah. The way that thing hunts and stuff, and the way that the ghoul hunts with it is just fantastic. It
uses Lucy as bait.
Yes. Well, I love... Before we get to the bait part, I love... And this is where storylines are mixing. We're cutting it all over the place. So I don't mean to...
Yeah, no.
If we want to do that, it's totally fine. But I love how the meeting between the ghoul and Lucy, you know, after she just barely survives, right? And now she's got to deal with the ghoul. And he's just sitting there with a gun in her face and, you know, hitting her, going, you know, hey, where is it? You know, all that great gangster shit.
Mm-hmm.
And she's finally come again. We get another chance to see Ella Purnell just excel. And
yes.
I lost it. Like, she says it to him, but also, like, to herself. Like, I did fuck up. Like, I did lose it, and you get to see a little bit of her sanity slip a little bit.
In a moment before that, with the deer. That was a nice moment to show that Lucy still has her humanity and still has the softer side of her before she starts getting even harder.
And she is so doe-eyed.
Yeah.
Yeah, she
really is.
I mean, it had... It's a testament to the casting. It's a testament to her facial acting, where she knows how to use her eyes very well.
Yes.
She's able to have these eyes of pure wonder or pure terror.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is a great scene where, again, we get to see some of her range. And
I love looking at the behind the scenes too with her and interacting with the deer.
Yeah. I got to see this. I haven't checked it out yet. Is it really?
Yeah, it's a real deer.
It looks like a real deer.
There's like pictures or videos of her like feeding the deer milk from a bottle, like a baby bottle.
Yeah, that's not milking a deer.
I stopped myself.
anything to get ahead, huh? but yeah, so then we jump to the other side of the wasteland. And we have Maximus just fucking with Thaddeus. I love this scene.
This is so fucking much.
I love this scene.
This is so fucking much where he's climbing up there. He's like, I don't think this is an apple tree. And also, I think it's dead. And then, on my honor, sir, I will find... And the branch breaks. Fuck! He falls from the fucking tree. I'm not doing it any justice at all, and I understand that.
But the timing of it all is so great.
I love him so fucking much. It's perfect.
And then leading into the dialogue scene.
Yes.
Where he's refilling his water, and, you know... There's a really, like...
say something nice about Maximus.
Yeah, and then say something terrible about him, and you get to see a humane side of Thaddeus there.
Yes.
Yeah, really well-written dialogue in that scene.
Oh, it's extremely well-written
I'm sure we all would have liked a situation like that, where we had that kind of power over a bully, and
being able
to see that, like, human side of them.
Well, and that's my question to you guys is, like, you definitely have that chance to get revenge on the bully, right? Or get revenge on someone who's done wrong to you. But at what point, it's understandable, but at what point is it excusable? Or is it excusable? You know, is there a point where revenge is actually worth it? You know, where it's okay to treat someone how you were treated just because that, you know, they treated you shitty? Like, that's the whole point where, again, like, the second that Maximus was in that power suit, like, he's got this power trip. Like, hey, clean this, you know, and I'm the bigger, tougher, stronger one. I'm in charge. Fuck you. Instead of remembering, not, you know, 2 hours ago, 20 hours ago, whatever long it's been, I was in the exact same situation.
Yeah.
And that's, that's what bothers me, though, about Maximus's character is that he's turning right around, knows that he's treated like shit, and it's like, he could have told Thaddeus, hey, look, my knight died. I took his suit to survive.
I don't know.
I think that's also a very human thing to do, but I see Titus as this, or Maximus, sorry.
Well, I mean, no, you're right, because there are basically two different characters. You have Maximus, and then you have Titus.
Yeah.
Right, when he's in the suit, and he is playing a character. He's and a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Love the reference.
Thanks, RDJ.
He still makes a character decision when he's inside the suit in that moment, whether he's gonna tell him or not, whether he's gonna be even more cruel to him, or if he's gonna, you know, ease up. And
I'll just say it now: his storyline is not grabbing me nearly as much as Lucy's, the vaults, or the ghouls.
That's fair. I agree with you 100%. That's definitely, in my opinion, that's the C story. I love Thaddeus so much. And I also love when they stumble across the body and Thaddeus takes the fucking stencil drawing and he's like, hey, is that the body? And holds up the stencil drawing. that's definitely him. That got me so good. That got me so good. It was fucking hilarious.
It's like, how can you tell without the head?
It's totally him. And then, of course, you know, then Thaddeus stumbling into finding the answer, you know, of like how to find him. Hey, wait a minute. You let the ghoul go. So good thinking. We can track him. Pulls out this futuristic device. Oh, yeah, totally. God. I definitely meant to do all of that.
Falling up or failing upwards.
Upwards. Which, again, you know, kind of, you know, going back to not only does he have compassion, but he's intuitive and Thaddeus is smart enough and he's resourceful and he really does understand like what it takes to get the job done.
Yeah.
He's just a goofball. He's a total goofball.
And him, I honestly don't mind as much as I do Maximus. But then again, I'm sure they're doing something for Maximus's story for the end of the series or for the end of the season anyway.
He has to have room to grow, right?
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, he starts off this way and then he has to have a character arc. So
I'm patiently waiting for him to start growing and changing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do also love, and I don't know, I don't think it's right away. I think we jump ahead to the next scene with the two of them where we do have that sit down conversation with them. And you really do get that again. I love perspective shifts when they're done well. And this is one of those that you really get a chance to see, yeah, I wasn't being a dick because I liked being a dick. I was being a dick because I was sick of being picked on.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, all of a sudden now the cool kid.
That was a real human moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And you really actually go, well, shit, now should I have compassion for this guy who, you know, I'm supposed to hate because I'm on Maximus' side? Yeah. Or is Maximus really even that good of a guy? Like, there's so many gray areas and there's so many wires getting crossed here. And it's just, it kind of forces the viewer to kind of make their own decision. It kind of, I don't think the show necessarily has a point of view on that. It just does, it opens, you know, the envelope a little bit further and allows you to really dissect it for yourself.
Now, I don't want to spoil things for Matt, but I don't like where his character ends up at the
Thaddeus
end of the season.
Or Maximus?
Oh, I like it. I just hope that I hope that we get more.
Are you talking about Thaddeus's character or Maximus's character?
Thaddeus.
Okay.
I don't like where Thaddeus ends up at the end of the season.
You don't like it. I think it's interesting.
And I am indifferent because I'm behind.
I know. I'm trying not to say anything.
Tisk.
Oh, hush. I'm doing this for the audience. So that way...
You're the surrogate?
Yeah, I'm the surrogate for the audience listening to the podcast. Yeah. Oh my god, my head just got bigger.
for the audience who's already seen the show?
Yeah. For the audience who's already seen the show and those that haven't and are watching along with the podcast.
There you go,
I'm
love
there
it.
There are a few audience members out there.
I hope so. I'd love to be your companion podcast on this. Anyway, no, we'll definitely get to that because I like it. I just hope we get more of it.
I'm not hopeful for that, the way they leave it off.
I am. It's
Are
open.
You?
It's open enough.
Okay. Maybe.
Maybe it's just wishful thinking.
Might be. It might be.
It might be.
You know what they say about wishful thinking? I don't know.
Oh.
hoping we had an answer for that?
I was. I was also just messing, but.
You son of a bitch. Speaking of a son of a bitch, that's the ghoul. That's the ghoul's job.
Yes,
and
he is.
He, at this point. Jumping back now, he's got Lucy tied up. That he definitely just gets off on being a son of a bitch. Like he's
really
totally
does.
Just like that's who he is. That's what he likes to do.
He's
like,
embracing the darker side of the character that he was playing on TV.
Yes, yes. Which I will get back to. I keep teasing it, but there's so many things that are so tied to each episode, like so well together. So I don't want to talk about one thing now and then come back to it later and just rehash it. But yeah. He's absolutely playing into the darker, meaner, you know, son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
And then I love, again, Lucy trying to bargain, right? Torturing is wrong, blah, 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 right? And she gets, you know, tossed back into the lake. And then, of course, you know, yeah, you're right. Torturing don't do shit, right? And it's like, what the fuck are you doing then? He likes it. He's getting off on it. He doesn't have to.
It's yet another layer of why he is such an interesting character to watch. It's like he is doing awful things, yet I can't look away because he is so charismatic while he's doing it.
Yeah,
I love that line. What you just said, torture don't do shit.
Well, she from her perspective, she is being tortured. From his perspective, he's just using her
to get a job.
Right. It's not torture. Exactly. Yeah,
it's nothing personal either. He's not getting information from her. He's just using her for a fish.
And see, and I think this episode, I mean, the whole series does this, but there's a few instances in this episode where we see perspective shifts and this is, you know, one of those moments when you see from both perspectives, and Jonathan Nolan does a great job of this, and a lot of his work is showing perspective. I know one of Matt's favorites, and one of my favorites too, of his movies is The Prestige, which is all about perspective shifts.
Yes, it is.
And then, you know, they did that in Westworld. Mm-hmm. He's really good at writing perspective.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just with the Man in Black in Westworld, the first season, you get a completely different side of him once you get to his origin of how he became the Man in Black.
I mean, same with Dorothy and who was... Rachel Wood's character.
Which is why I'm so excited for season two, because we get snippets of it. We start to lead into for later in the series in season one, we get a little bit of that what made Cooper turn into the ghoul, you know? Yeah. How did he actually become not just ghoulified, but like, how did he become this character?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm really excited for, is to see this progression and this change.
And another thing they do really well in the show is each character shows that there are two sides of them. There is a good and a bad side. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's that whole two wolves thing. Inside of us is two wolves, and one's evil, one's good, and it depends on which one you feed.
Yeah, and even like somebody who seems as innocent as Norm does have good and bad within them. He wants the prisoners dead.
He's
maybe not the best of intentions.
So him and the ghoul are the ones I am watching the most closely, because those two, and Lucy to an extent, but those characters are the ones I'm watching closest, because they have the largest potential to show their truest colors by the end of the series.
Yeah, it's a character paradox.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you have both, and they juxtapose with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so Lucy's getting, you know, uses bait, and it brings the axolotl in. And I love that whole struggle, that whole fight, right? It's the first time we actually get to see the fingers and all that shit, like whatever the fuck it is, and the fear. Like you were talking about how just the Ella Purnell's eyes are just wide with terror.
Yep.
Fucking love it. It's awesome. And then, you know, she's doing anything she can, right? She's grabbing anything around her, which in turn, you know, is whatever that fucking saddlebag that the ghoul is carrying, which is carrying his meds, which we'll get to in the next episode. Now that's broken, right? The axolotl swims away, and you know, now the ghoul's his motivation has changed, right? Now it's
flips on a dime.
Yep. Now it's but also he says, I don't remember what the creature is called, but he's like, oh, it's whatever creature this is.
Gulper.
A gulper.
Yeah.
They digest slowly.
Yeah, he's saying that more to himself though.
Oh, absolutely he is. But
and I really like that though, because again, he's like, okay, gulper digests real slowly. I've got time.
Yes. Like So I can go and do something else and then still come back to it.
Yeah.
Which is all of what Fallout is. A lot of RPGs are very much, you know, there's a quest and then there's a bunch of fucking bullshit side quests. So there's always, hey, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to go over here, I'm going to do this, and then I'll come back. And I love it. But what I love even more about it is the line that he fucking says. So while Lucy is being tortured, right? She's, you know, why shouldn't I fucking use you as bait? Well, because of the golden rule, right? Do unto those how you want done unto you. And then the ghoul gives another great line. Well, the wasteland has its own fucking golden rule, right? Which is, thou shalt get distracted by bullshit every goddamn time. Which is just a great line for those who play video games, who understand what that means.
If you've played the first Red Dead, then
I
haven't. Oh my gosh, that is nothing but distractions from the main quest.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they all lead up to the final confrontations later on in the game, but it's, like, that was my biggest gripe with Red Dead 1, less so with Red Dead 2, because, I don't know, it's prettier to look at. But it was a very similar vibe of, like, oh, we're going to get Javier Escuela, but first I've got to help with this revolution. Oh, but before I help with this revolution, I've got to help with the other side of it and play them against each other.
Right.
Because they all keep saying that they have information of where Javier Escuela is, and then turns out...
I mean,
out,
yeah, as somebody who has worked on video games, the Life is Strange series that I worked on, you know, it was so interesting watching it go from script to our mocap room, and then seeing it all done in the video game, and just seeing those side quests, but... I feel like movies and TV both have side quests, and that's what your B line and C line stories are.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, to an extent.
But they do. But like I said before, they do a great job in bringing those video game moments to life. In the series,
It definitely leads me to my favorite episode, which is episode 4, Ghouls.
Yes,
but
yes.
We'll get to that when we get to that.
We'll get right to that. There's a little bit left in this. Actually, there's a lot more in this episode. Holy shit. So we've talked about the conversation with Thaddeus and Maximus. I love that. And what I also love, I want to mention about how Thaddeus has like no qualms about like making small talk and trying to get like on his knight's good side and just. But I think that that's a nervous energy, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's how he's learned to cope with all of this anxiety that he's riddled with, is he just talks. And mm-hmm. and to me, that is character development, right there in and of itself, where you don't have to go into too much backstory, or you don't have to go into too much, but you just let the character be, you let the actor take over, and you infuse it with human realness, and it becomes something greater than you could ever hope for.
Yeah.
Then we also get the funny backstory. Hey, I was a shitter. What the fuck is that? Well, I grew up on a fly farm, right? And so we ate, and then we fed the flies the shit, and then we sold the flies protein. That's disgusting. But also really very funny.
And he calls himself fat.
That's why I'm so fat.
It's so funny because
he's a twig.
But is that body shaming, or is that realistic writing? Because we're 200 years in the future and food is scarce, right?
I guess somebody his size is considered fat, right? Now?
Again, it's very funny. It's very tongue in cheek, and it's very
obviously
on the edge.
He hasn't been to a vault,
right?
right.
Also true.
I keep wanting to come back to the vault because that's where I think we're going to see a lot more true fallout happening. Not necessarily in the wasteland, but in the inner workings of the vault.
Well, the games were like that too. You get a lot of information from the vaults, not from the wasteland.
Yep. Or, you know, you get a lot of information about the vaults even. Yeah.
You
like,
learn
not even
from experience in the wasteland, but you learn by reading in the vault.
Yep. Well, yeah. You're taught certain history in the vault. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
The shot, there's one shot in particular where we're in the vault, right? And we're doing the whole council meeting, or, you know, with everybody, and they're going, hey, what should we do with these prisoners? And there's the shot between or behind, is it Stephanie? I think it's Stephanie.
Stephanie's the one with the
with the eye patch.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of sitting there, and she looks like this fucking villain. She looks like this evil, like James Bond villain almost.
I mean, I saw my suspicions about her too.
Oh, I can't wait. That's awesome. Well, again, but like just the shot behind her, and it's like, you know, oh my God, she's so formidable. And so it's so haunting of a view. You get great writing, you get good cinematography, you get a lot of, you know, interesting ideas going. You throw them all together, and this is what comes out.
And then when Norm speaks up, they exchange a look to each other.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, and then afterwards, even, she pulls him aside, be like, hey, your father would do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and in that part, there's, so this is right after the news of their water system has broke.
Yes.
And there is a great background line. If you guys didn't pick up on it, just cracked me up.
What's that?
One of the extras, whether it's by direction or just improv, they say, we're going to have to drink our own urine.
Oh, no, I did not hear that.
Yeah, I didn't catch it the first time I watched it, but the second time going through, I was like, oh, that is so funny.
That's incredible. But again, and then that's, you know, that's used to exemplify how unqualified, you know, these morons are to try and run the entire vault. It's fine. You know, the old overseer's out, so in with the new. You know, tell us what's up with this. All right, let's cause some panic. Let's do it. But I also love how we get Norm also picks up on that first. Norm picks up on that before the water chip malfunction, you know, mess, debacle.
He already realizes that leadership is going to be the most important tool they have.
Yes. So he 100% uses that. Hey, he literally says, it was not my intention to question your leadership, overseer. And he says one, not both. He intentionally starts, you know, turning that knife a little bit.
Because he knows
Napoleonic
that there's...
Napoleonic almost.
Yes.
Or what's the...
There's a power struggle.
There
yes.
we go.
Yes.
He knows that there's a power struggle going on between the council and who wants to oversee everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
he's stoking the fire like a child would.
I don't know. I feel.
Oh, I do.
He and Lucy both really feel like siblings because they both.
Oh yeah,
they both exhibit traits of their father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and when he said that, I could see his dad saying that as well.
Oh, absolutely. He's so manipulative, and he knows it.
Yeah.
And this is before we get to the conversation about how much weight he has. You know,
yeah,
that,
that's
again,
like in
he,
the next
you,
episode.
You get these little glimpses of what this of who these but, characters are going to be, and like where all of this kind of starts. And it's in when those kind of things come through, that's when they're at their best, I think.
But that one member of the council, Betty Pearson, Blind Al, she you can already tell she's noticing his new potential. Just as not only as a leader, but someone that is able to, I don't know, further maybe her own cause, and or further the father's cause.
Just you wait.
Whose cause? I know. I'm really excited. Norm strikes me very much as a Machiavellian character, okay. Someone that isn't necessarily strong physically, but is. Devastating mentally.
Yep. Yep. He put all of his perks into intelligence.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
he did. Maybe a little bit into charisma as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because,
oh, absolutely.
Again, his voice does carry weight. And I love what you brought up, Luke, about the other woman coming out to him and saying your father would do the right thing. It's a follower. It's the first of many followers. I think.
Well, he also ropes Chet into helping him.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember if that's this episode
next,
or the next one.
Next episode.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
We love Chet though. For
Chet's fantastic.
Chet's
so much fun.
Chet's just a lovable idiot.
The only thing in that scene that I didn't really believe with Norm and the council is he said that so softly.
Mm-hmm.
Then they heard him from the back, and they call him out on it.
Mm-hmm.
How did they hear him just like scoff?
Because the plot has to move forward.
Thank you.
Have you heard of suspension of disbelief?
No, what's that? Because he's a main character. That's why. That's the real truth.
But he scoffs it very inaudibly, and
I would have directed him to be a little louder.
I think it's because they're already looking out for it. They're already looking at him because he's already a troublemaker. So any kind of like, not just I'm going to go with this. I'm nodding my head. Anything.
There is very much a control that they have over this society and the vault.
Yes. So you're looking out for those who are going against what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
You already kind of have your eye on that.
Yeah.
So back with Max and Thaddeus, which. I believe is the, oh no, then we go back to Cooper. Okay, cool. So the second to last scene, so back with Max and Thaddeus, of course, somehow they waited, you know, well, I guess they are tracking the ghoul, so,
yeah.
Well, what they think is the ghoul, they wade into the water, and then, only after they're, you know, waist deep into the water, do they go, you know what, I wonder if I'm picking up on something besides the ghoul, because, you know, this picks up on some, you know, radioactive elements, but it might not be the one we're looking for. You idiot. You fucking morons. Seriously? But also, again, pretty funny. And then it turns, you know, into what we saw in the bear cave, right?
Yeah.
Instead of the, you know, Max saying, hey, you go in and figure this out. He goes, hey, you get the fuck out, right?
Yeah.
I'm a knight. I'm 100%. I've got the gun. I've got the armor. Except that he's not. He's a terrible shot. And he's not a knight, so he doesn't know how to do any of this.
More
His intentions are good.
More stormtrooper nods.
Yes, much more stormtrooper nods.
Couldn't hit the broadside of a Death Star.
But also, how tall is that fucking axolotl? Like, how does it stand the water
so
like
big.
That? That is awesome.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
That was dope.
And then, of course, I think a perfect placement of the song is called In the Mood by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. Perfect placement of that right there. Where there's, you know, again, mass chaos and, you know, terror. And then you just have this bright, bubbly, you know, soaring score. I love
represent
it.
Represent with Glenn Miller, by the way. Colorado native.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. Really?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, go to CU Boulder. You'll see a whole section dedicated to him.
Wow, cool.
Because he was from here.
That's awesome.
Hell
That's
yeah.
awesome.
We
Shout
love
out.
That shit.
Shout out to a native. Nice. Well,
good old Glenn
someone
Miller.
Who went to school here.
A Colorado.
Yeah. And I also thought this is definitely where Thaddeus was going to die. Like 100%, I thought that Max either was going to let him die or wasn't going to be able to save him. So what the fuck actually was it that killed the monster? That's what I want to know. I don't think we got an actual explanation from that. So,
the monster blew up after he took the bag.
I don't know what he took. I don't know. Because he was eating Thaddeus.
She like. Oh wait.
Right, he was eating Thaddeus, and all of a sudden he just kind of chokes and throws everything up, and then keels over. So that was very convenient, but
this was the axolotl, still, right?
Yeah.
So, but this was after Lucy gave the bag, the ghoul's bag. Fed the ghoul's bag to the axolotl.
You think that was it?
So there might have been something in the bag.
Okay.
That blew him up.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, I couldn't tell you.
They got the head back?
Right? Yeah. Yeah. This is where they get the head.
So I think the bag, my theory is something in the bag blew him up.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Why not? I have no answer for you. If anyone in the who's listening knows, please send us a comment and let me know what the hell happened. Yep. And then we get some gorgeous set design with the ghost town, like the literal ghost town with a ghoul and not dragging, but, walking Lucy through. Loved it. But again, how cruel the ghoul is, just to kind of prove that he's the toughest thing around, right? It is definitely to help teach Lucy what life really is on the surface. Cause everyone on the surface hates vault dwellers. So he's like, fuck you. I'm going to teach you exactly what it's like to live up here. And you know, to push her to the breaking point or, you know, to break her entirely, you know,
one way or the other, it doesn't matter to him.
Exactly.
Cause he's just imposing the will of the wasteland at this point. I think that's where his ethos is now.
Yes.
It's whatever the wasteland wants.
Yes.
That's the ghoul.
Which, yes, again, is why it's so perfect that he was the spokesperson for Vault-Tec.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Which is an amazing, like, it's foreshadowing, but just barely, because he shoots off the face of the Vault Boy from the billboard, and you're like, what the fuck is that all about? Because you hate Vault Dwellers? No.
It's a resentment to Vault-Tec.
Then you get the reveal that he was the Vault Boy. He was the spokesperson.
Yeah.
Which is just... so great. He's all gung-ho about it. You're doing God's work, and he's, you know, giving them a round of applause. And again, drastic change is so interesting. So you go from there to where we are. Matt, I can't wait for you to see the rest of this
characters
season.
Like that always fascinate me.
Yes.
Another example of that, not in Fallout, would be Jodie Foster's character in Inside Man.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
So... she plays a character that is so cunning and has everybody's number. And my dad and I brought this up when we watched it together years and years ago, but he's like, it would be terrifying to see how she got to where she is, to where she can just burst in on the mayor and call in a favor.
Yeah.
Like, what does she have on him?
Yeah.
It's a similar thing with Coop, the ghoul. Granted, we're actually getting some of that. We're getting piecemeal evidence of who he was before and how he got to be where he is now.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a 200-year span that we don't know about.
Right, right, exactly. And then, of course, we end on the iconic thumbs up. I love that. I love that. And then we get some more amazing credits, animation with... we're seeing on the billboard, we get half the Vault Boy, half of Cooper's face, right? Just to make sure that you really understand this is what we were doing. And of course, the Hollywood sign and the fucking 405 freeway are going to be standing 200 years from now. Of course they are.
Sure.
But it was at this moment that I started to realize the end credit scenes are foreshadows of the next episode, because the shopping carts are in that end credit scene. Which go into the Super Duper Mart in the next episode.
Right. Interesting.
I'm excited.
I just like those because we get to see more of the wasteland. We get to just see more of the destruction of everything. But yeah, so that's episode 3. That's the head. That's definitely a great episode. I think that's one of the best ones. I don't know what's my favorite just yet. I need to definitely do some research on, you know, sit down and go, okay, how do I like each of these? You know, what are some of the elements that I like better or worse? Mm-hmm. But this is definitely on top of the heap right now. It's got just comedy out the ass. It's got plenty of action. It's got a shit ton of backstory. The fight choreography is interesting. The music is great. Mm. CGI is actually really good as well.
It's definitely getting better, I would say. The CGI.
Yeah.
I was just going to say on the fight choreography of Maximus's scene.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to. I was going to tell a joke about that it's. That he got out of that super easy. It was barely an inconvenience.
Oh my god. For those that don't watch Ryan George.
He's gonna be surrounded by five raiders and no power armor. That's gonna be super difficult for him to get out of.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy.
Barely an inconvenience.
Well, okay then.
Oh, okay then. Megan references is toy.
Shout out to Ryan George.
All righty, guys. Yeah, Ryan, if you're listening, hello, we love you. Come hang out with us.
Yes, please.
All right, guys, that was episode 3. Next time, because, you know, time is different here on the podcast. Time we talk, we'll be talking episode 4 of Fallout. Episode 4 is titled
Ghouls.
The Ghouls. So come back, check us out then. Like I said, we're all over socials. Let us know what you think in the comments of episode 3, what your thoughts are if you haven't been watching, if you haven't already watched, what your thoughts are for what's to come in Fallout. We've got YouTube up and running. We've got plenty of places to check out the podcasts like Spotify and Apple and Google, so definitely go check those out. All the links will be in the show notes. Enjoy the movies, enjoy the TV shows. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Don't forget the golden rule.